magical hour. I'm Matthew and Schaefer. Podcast Spectacular.
Well, there's a new segment where we actually like check ourselves during the show. Usually we just spout bollocks and correct ourselves later.
Darkness has fallen on Austin, Texas. That's one of those nights where it's the temperature says something cold, but really it's kind of warm and humid. A really bizarre thing that sometimes happens here in Texas. Don't know what to say. We can talk more about that later. Let's not forget to come back to the subject of what to wear in a Texas winter day. But first, we got to say hello to my good friend. Here for episode 198 of One Magical Hour, a Matthew and Schaefer podcast spectacular. We're back after a little. We're back to just doing it again here in my ivy covered castle, wherein I'm welcoming this guy. He's the pride of Tarzana, California. He's the most legendary name in contemporary children's folk rock. He's Matthew Rampy.
I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far. I took the good times. I'll take the bad times. Podcast you just the way you are.
That was beautiful, Matthew.
Thanks, Jeffy. I actually did that one before in episode 53, but I did a different verse.
Okay.
And I was thinking of a different verse as I came to this one. I used the finder in our voluminous show sheet for episode 198. I think we should call this episode Matthew's in a mood.
Matthew is in a mood. We're in. I think the world might be in a little bit of a mood. We're happy to be here. We took a little bit of a hiatus during the madness of the holiday season. We're both still kind of catching up from all that, I think. But it's really good to be back here talking to you guys and getting things in order. I've been thinking about some funny things that I try to file away to talk to Matthew about on the podcast, on One Magical Hour. And it's a challenge to me, because of my lack of organizational skills, to try to keep track of all those things. But I did the best I can, and there's a few things that I would like to talk to you about today.
Okay, I'll allow it.
And the first one is, I think this is kind of a funny little bit. It occurred to me that I might have a question for my mom about this one. So let's give her a call.
And wait, we're calling your mom?
Yep.
Okay.
Can I try to get Mom Hall on the line? Are you excited?
Yeah. I mean, we had your dad on the last episode. It seems only fitting that we talk to your mom. Too bad she's not here. We're just going to get her on the phone here.
I'm very excited.
Your mom's name is Shyla, right?
Shyla, yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
Good evening. Good evening. So great to have you. I'm here with Matthew Rampy. You remember Matthew, of course?
Of course.
Hi, Shyla.
Hello, Matthew. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. One might say.
But okay.
Thank you. Yes.
After the madness of the holiday season.
Yes. That takes a toll, doesn't it?
Particularly exciting for the moms and dads of the bunch.
Right.
I have a few kind of funny things. It's kind of a catch-up end of the year episode for some things that have been on my mind. Maybe some cool news stories. Lots of interesting stuff about some stuff that you've sent me to. But first, I wanted to talk to you about something kind of funny that I was thinking about. Mom, can you tell me what my gender reveal party was like?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. The what?
I said, could you tell me what my gender reveal party was like?
Did you have a gender reveal party when Schaefer was in utero?
No, absolutely not. I had no idea what he was, if he was a boy or a girl.
Oh, how exciting!
What have you found out? what's your assessment now?
Definitely male.
Male, okay. Okay.
Yes.
Well, then I would prefer that he not play women's sports, but that's just me.
Oh, you and me both.
There's...
No, I never knew on any of the three. I just, by the time Richard was coming along, you could find out, but I kind of figured I needed that bit of excitement to get through.
Yeah, sure. That's...
Makes you go ahead and go to the hospital.
It's a fun surprise. So I was laughing. This occurred to me, and of course, I didn't have a gender reveal party. But I was kind of just laughing about the gender of art, like called to find out, just kind of a cultural phenomenon for stuff. It's amazing how quickly gender reveal parties went from not a thing to a popular thing in the news to a total punchline, and really, I think almost not a thing anymore.
No, I think there's still a thing.
Oh, people are still just not in my bubble, I guess.
Maybe not in your bubble. Maybe I just heard of one just the other day. I heard of a recent gender reveal party, so I think they are still being done. What do you know about it? When did they become popular?
Well, okay, so I looked it up, guys. Punchline, or getting to the point. And
you better get to the point, Schaefer. We only have 52 minutes left to fill in this episode, so hurry up. Just get to the point of this gender reveal thing.
We know what a gender reveal party is. Distinct from a baby shower, practice has been criticized for the use of elaborate and dangerous special effects, which have directly contributed to multiple deaths, injuries, and large-scale forest fires, namely the 2017 Sawmill Fire and the 2020 El Dorado Fire. Folks, be careful when you're gender revealing. Don't blow things up. I think
that, I like when firearms are involved.
Right.
Have you seen it where the bride uses like an AK and blows up a balloon?
I think that was the El Dorado fire. That was actually a sheriff, I think, in Arizona.
I do know of another gender reveal party that was that used firearms in North Texas. So
firearms are important for, you know, hunting wild hogs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. If you want to kill a wild hog, use a firearm.
Protecting your homestead.
Oh yeah. If there's standing grandma.
There's nothing in the Constitution about exposing the sex of your unborn fetus.
Is more to it than just cutting open a cupcake.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah. That's so the first, an early example was recorded in the 2008. I should have asked you, when do you guys think it came onto the scene? But now I've given it up. Is that early or late to you? Or?
I would have had no idea. That sounds about right. That sounds about right when I started here. It's not an old phenomenon.
Late 2000s. And so this is the Chicago Now blog. Her blog was called High Gloss and Sauce, announcing the sex of her fetus via a cake. So that's a good, simple way to do it. I think that makes a lot of sense. Cut the cake, get the whatever the indication of the sex is going to be. And then the Wikipedia article goes on to describe some YouTube videos of 2008, 2009. And this is what got me. So I wanted to keep, I don't know if we really need to just keep going on this subject.
Well, let's just hear what your mom thinks about this subject first. Like, Shiloh, what's your impression of gender reveal parties in general?
Well, I think it's kind of like everything else in this world, a tad over the top, maybe.
Right.
But it is kind of fun when you go to a baby shower and you already know what the baby is because you get to buy a present, you know.
That makes sense, yeah, so people can prepare better.
That's right, but I am far more, I like it my way, you know. I much prefer having the excitement of meeting the new baby with no preconceptions.
Yeah, I think that is probably the funnest way to do it.
I mean, we found out the sex of our children before they were born, but we just... You know, I don't know. I guess we might have alerted the attendees to the shower.
Yeah, sure. You just put that in an invitation.
And then some people are like, "Well, I want to wait. I want to be surprised." And I was like, "Well, I'll be surprised when the doctor tells us." You know, and I don't know. My super cynical take on it is, it's just another thing to buy stuff for. That, like, it created a new market, the gender reveal party stunt trick market, and you sell like lots of blue powder and lots of pink powder
and
balloons
and minor explosives.
And then I guess it was a boon. You guys were talking about a cake, so it was a great boon for bakeries. And I mean, that's the most important thing, is that we create new markets to sell more stuff. That's the most important thing in our society. I don't know if you guys have heard, but it's called capitalism.
I like that. That's a nice way of looking at it, Matthew. It's a good thing for the bakers of the world.
Yeah. The downtrodden bakers.
I love bakers.
Right. Got to keep that trickle down working.
So the direction that I went on this is, it's really funny when to discover the origins of things. It's interesting that, you know, we used to say go to the Oxford English Dictionary or something, and they would go back to when it first appeared in, you know, American newspapers or something, to establish, you know, roughly the origin of a new cultural phenomenon. But going forward now, we use YouTube.
Right.
When it first popped up on YouTube.
Yeah, and you can be real accurate that way. Like stamped and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of started thinking about things coming and going so quickly. I was thinking about fidget spinners.
Okay.
It seems like those are all the way gone now.
Again, I think that, like a lot of great American fads, there's a big splash and then there's a long, long ripple behind it. Because I think for a certain age of kid, fidget spinners are still a thing. And they're not like, I mean, it's like Beanie Babies. Like, Beanie Babies were huge. And to some people, Beanie Babies are still a thing.
But, and that's, I was also thinking about what makes a fad sticky. And I think having Beanie Babies had the collectability, you know, you got to find them all. You got to, you know, get it. I think that is something that really appeal, that can make a fad really appeal to a certain kind of person. Yeah. And really make it sticky so that it sticks with you. But I wanted to ask Mom, do you remember, so this got me thinking about kids and stuff and how it sticks around, and I was just wondering if Mom could remember any of her toys from her childhood?
Oh, mine. Let's see. What do I remember opening on Christmas Day? Easy Bake Oven.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was a very exciting one. Well, I got a Barbie doll when we moved from Jackson, Mississippi to Corpus. Daddy put me and our collie dog, Brownie, in the Morris Minor, and we took off. And Mother and Kurt flew. And I can remember him stopping at the store and walking in and coming out with a Barbie doll and two outfits. And I played with it all the way. And then my grandmother made clothes for it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Grandma Annette would make clothes. And so, yeah, I would guess those were... I remember getting a pogo stick.
Oh, nice. Yes.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, we kind of spent a lot of time outdoors growing up in Corpus. So I remember chalk on the sidewalks, Christmas tree forts.
Cool.
Bicycles. Oh, I remember getting my bicycle. Grandpa Blake came from Ohio and got Kurt and I both bicycles. And when he had a movie camera, he could run it backwards of us.
Oh, cool. Bicycle, yeah. That's definitely, I was thinking about stuff that sticks. So you probably had the Barbie for a significant time, you know, a few years at least, right?
Yes, and, that's right. And yeah, eventually you got, then they came out with more, you know, people and plastic cars and things. But originally it was just a Barbie doll with a ponytail and a swimming suit and different clothes. Oh, and the little shoes. The shoes were a big thing.
And bicycles, of course, bicycles are just amazing. I definitely remember all of the ones that I had, how long I had them, such fun. But, you know, that's kind of in another classification, because that gave you mobility. You know, that was as much a tool as a toy.
And that's right.
Gosh, so important. And you guys did a lot of stuff with fish, right? Down on the, getting fish out of the bay?
That's right. We had a saltwater aquarium, and we went down to the jetties and the T-heads there in Corpus with seines and nets and caught stuff for the aquarium. We spent a lot of time in the swimming pool and at the beach. Had a sailboat. A Dolphin Senior. Kurt and I got that probably started sailing about eighth grade, maybe.
Wow.
So did a lot of sailing there in the bay. Roller skates. We had roller skates. Hours on roller skates. But everything I can remember, you know, because you were really off in the summertime, but by the time you walked home from elementary school or got home from even certainly elementary because you walked, it was like 4:30 when you got home. So you might get to play outside a little bit, but then it was dinner and then it was homework and then it was bedtime. So I really remember more playing outside, maybe some on the weekends during the school year, but it was really summertime. Summertime was freedom.
That is so mad. Like the thing with the boats, just for you guys to be able to just go down to the bay and sail your boat around there, that's magical to me.
Yeah. We used to sail across the bay. There were like Irwin Sherman and his brother and the Harrelsons. There were several, you know, siblings, and Gary and Grant Harrelson's grandparents lived across the bay. I want to say in Aransas Pass. I don't know, but it'd take all day to get there, and our dads would drive with the trailers and pick us up when we made it across the bay, you know, when they got off work and brought us back.
That is awesome.
I guess I don't know. You're right. We certainly had a lot more freedom when you think about it than people today.
That's, I feel a little bit of, every kid's going to find their fun and have, but yeah, I think about, riding my bike from Mama's house just to Town and Country Mall, riding over to Anthony Scardino's place. That was so much fun and so cool. And it felt grown up. Mm-hmm. And, nowadays you probably wouldn't want your kid necessarily riding his bike halfway across Houston, just because there's more cars out there. It's just more dangerous. But
we're in a pretty good situation where Griffin's in fifth grade now, and he's pretty rangy, he comes home from school and he gets on his bike and he goes out, he goes down to the neighborhood where his elementary school is, and there's like a little strip center, and then there's the public, there's the park that's right next to the elementary school, and they go to different houses and stuff. But I mean, he's out there, until it's dark. And, so kids are still doing that and they need that. Some kids are doing it. I know that other kids are just heavily guarded and they spend a lot of their free time on screens, and
that's how it seems to me. I mean, obviously I'm out of the parenting loop.
I mean, the phones have everything, the devices have everything jacked up, because if you allow them, they'll just default to that. It's like a drug.
I understand. Yeah.
And we've made a point to limit those things and encourage this other old timey thing. And there's a guy that is a little older than us and grew up on our block, has lived in this house all his life.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's a plumber, and he commented, I don't know what his profession had to do with anything, but he commented to me like, oh, it's so great to, see kids outside and playing. And, it's an epidemic. Shyla, let me ask you, what I caught about that story is that y'all moved from Jackson, Mississippi?
Yes.
My wife is from Jackson.
No, I did not.
We were just there, and we got married there, and I growing up in Lubbock, I didn't know anything about the South.
Mom, she might not have been there very long. Mom, I would be really interested to just hear if you take us through. I know you're born in Albuquerque, and just all of the different places that you live, because you can say why. Grandpa was in the Air Force.
Oh.
Right. So a lot of the places we were stationed and things, I was too little. But at some point, we end up in England. And by then, I'm old enough to have some memories, a few. And then we came back from England, and Daddy went to work for Tennessee Gas. And as a geologist, as an exploration. And first we got sent they did their field camp back then in the Rocky Mountains. And you got a Jeep. And so first we lived in Denver. And that's where we got our collie dog. And that was a lot of fun. And I have memories of that. I think that's why I probably maybe even became a geologist, was bouncing around on the back of the Jeep with my brother, and we'd go up to mines and things. And then from there, we got transferred to Jackson, Mississippi, and I did kindergarten and maybe some of first grade. And I don't exactly remember when we moved to Corpus, but then the rest of the time it was Corpus and Houston. A couple times we thought we were going to get transferred, but we never did.
Oh, that's nice. So you actually spent most of it in Corpus then.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And I think I remember you telling me, I love to imagine this, when you came back from England, you had a little bit of an accent. You talked funny.
Oh, yes. Well, I had a lot of, I remember one thing my Grandpa, I think we stayed with my grandparents in Ohio, and I made the mistake. We'd gone to go get a sticky bun in the morning, and I asked how many tuppence it was. So Grandpa immediately sat me down and taught me the monetary system.
And did you think that one day that monetary system would spawn something like gender reveal parties? It's such a great system.
That's right.
Another interesting... Go ahead. Sorry, Mom.
Welcome to trickle-down economics.
That's right.
A big thing for me when I think about your youth is that you moved from Houston to Corpus before your senior year of high school.
From Corpus to Houston.
Sorry, Corpus to Houston, yeah.
Yeah, you went from a high school of, oh my goodness, I think we had maybe 400 to, I don't know, 1,200 or something. It was, yeah, that was kind of tough, but it was also good. I think the school I was put in Houston was a lot harder than anything I'd ever done in Corpus Christi. So that was a good segue to end up being a freshman in college.
You got a challenge.
Indeed.
Did you, I remember, cause I did a little moving around myself. I remember when I moved from Houston to Lubbock, I kind of took advantage of a little time to reinvent myself. And I told everybody that I was a surfer.
Okay.
Which, you know, I did some windsurfing, you know, on the Texas City Dyke. Of course, a lot of skateboarding. But did you take advantage of that time? Did you reinvent yourself at all in that move?
You know, I really wasn't there long enough or meet enough people. Memorial High School in Houston is kind of set in its ways. I really couldn't even tell you one person's name from that senior year, but I did learn how to light a Bunsen burner. So, you know, I mean, I was really behind in terms
of that.
Wait,
is that a euphemism?
No, oh. It was true. I didn't even know how to light them. You end up in chemistry and I've never even seen a Bunsen burner. It's like, what am I going to do now? So it was really a good thing. I mean, to end up in a really, not necessarily high pressure school, but a school with a lot more stuff going on.
And then,
really didn't have the same degree of math and science, but also, I don't know, I was a swimmer, so I was busy too. You know, so I really wasn't in the social scene.
And then Grandma Annette got you the MG, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Grandma Annette got me the MG, which I could get any car I wanted, but I remembered MGs from England.
Yeah.
I wanted MG, and Daddy found one used. And so had to learn how to drive a stick. That was
fantastic.
Yeah, but it was a great set of wheels. Had wire wheels, Smith instruments, you know. It was a lot of fun.
Was that a convertible?
No, it was a GT with the hard top. Daddy wouldn't get a convertible.
The MG does make a lot of convertibles, don't they?
Yes, mainly they are.
Okay,
but there was the BGT that was a hard top with a hatchback.
Right.
It was kind of about the same time the Datsun 280Z came out, although I think it was a 240 back then. But there were several, it was a period there of, you know, sloped back cars with a hatchback. And
I loved those little Datsun Z cars.
I had some fun riding around in that MG.
Oh, yeah?
You did?
I don't remember it, but...
He did. He'd sit on the back of the 2 6-volt batteries and hold on to the seat.
Is that because you were drunk?
Yeah,
okay. Just because you were a kid. You were a baby.
We
didn't strap people in back then.
Oh, right. Yeah, you just sort of rambled around back there.
Indeed. Bounced around and went wee when we took the turns too fast.
The first car, I remember, tell Mom, how does the MG compared to to the first car I remember, which was the Dodge Omni.
Oh, man. That was a miserable experience, wasn't it? Broke down everywhere. That's how you got that named Alice. We broke down and you asked, where are we now? And I said, Alice, Texas. And you said, well, that's a girl's name. And I said, indeed. So that's, you had been trying to figure out what to name your cat.
I loved Alice so much. Actually, Grace ended up giving her daughter the middle name of Alice. So Alice, Texas had a big influence on us.
A great cat. We called her Nurse Alice. When anyone was sick, she came straight in and lay right beside you kids.
Tabby cat. That tabby cat spent a lot of time just laying on my chest.
So, Shyla, when y'all moved to Lubbock, were you teaching at Tech?
No, their dad was.
Grant was, okay.
Yeah.
But your geology career, did you work in West Texas?
Yes. Well, I kind of morphed. When we first came, I commuted back to Houston for almost 2 years, practically.
Wow.
I would go on Monday night and come back Thursday night. And so I think I have probably one of the lowest Southwest Airlines rapid rewards numbers. I think mine's 3 digits.
Cool.
So anyway, but then I started to pick up work here and eventually just, you know, kind of morphed into Southwest Geological and just worked up here.
How did that... I don't know the exact story. How did that pivot happen from petroleum geology to doing the groundwater work?
Well, it was kind of just what, you know, there was a call for. There was another downturn in the oil patch, which, you know, is the story of our lives.
Yeah.
And Terry Crowfoot was kind of one of the first for the feedlot, but he started doing more hydrology type work and water feasibility studies, as well as fate and transport and modeling of plumes, groundwater plumes that have a contaminant in them. So it also got driven to a certain extent. Texas began enforcing that Safe Drinking Water Act that had passed earlier.
Oh, sure, yeah. So there was a lot of funding for it all of a sudden.
That's right, exactly. And being on a Class 1 aquifer, which were basically the Ogallala and the Edwards, those were the two areas that were being concentrated on.
So was it Terry Crowfoot asking you to help out that kind of turned you on to the whole possibility, or?
Well, there were several, you know. I'm trying to think of who the early people I worked for. I worked for McLean Oil and Charlie Bolton and
remember those guys? I love the name Terry Crowfoot. You also worked for a guy who had my favorite name. His name was Dub Mantooth.
Oh, I did.
Wow.
I did. He's a great guy.
Was he just a developer?
He was a property developer.
So you would do due diligence for him?
Right. And then the first tanks I pulled were there at Lubbock High. Back there behind the bank, the band hall that backed up to the old auto shop.
What kind of tanks?
They used them for their waste oil.
Oh. And they were contaminated groundwater?
Well, they didn't. Waste oil, unlike gasoline, tends to be more, you know, it doesn't flow. Unless they're adding solvents and degreasers to it, it doesn't tend to make it to the water table. But in this case, we had backhoes back there and dug down and got all the dirty soil out. But yeah, that was kind of the start of. So the environmental field was more of the was what really. And then Dwight, remember, started coming up here. First, we had Cassell and Hall, and we were doing, you know, horizontal drilling in the Austin Chalk and everything down in South Texas. And then he started coming up and helping me up here. And then, let's see, I got some work for Texaco Mid-Continent. And I went to Tulsa, and they said I needed to incorporate. And so we're sitting around that boardroom thinking, and they said, where all will you go? And I said, well, I'll go anywhere Southwest Airlines flies. So that ended up with Southwest Geological.
I didn't know that. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a big plume down in Midland that we were working on, that gasoline was coming in through the AT&T lines into the basement.
Oh, wow.
Office building down there, and Texaco was the last person with the lights on, but it wasn't their fuel, you know, it was actually coming from somewhere else, but, like, you know, 35 monitor wells later, you know, we had it figured out. So that's when I started. So really, Texaco was my anchor tenant, I guess is what you'd say, Texaco Mid-Continent.
That's when it really took off. And that the work on the Ogallala Aquifer ended up being, you know, what, 2.5 decades for you?
Well, it still is.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is so cool.
Yeah, it's a fascinating beast.
I certainly have fond memories of pulling water samples with Matthew Roy.
Yes.
Is that a euphemism?
And doing, literally pulling water samples.
No, we're learning stuff here.
Matthew Roy and I worked for a whole summer together on that. And Jay Cryer worked for her for a while.
Yes. That's a sharp kid.
I have fond memories of doing surveying work with Steve Killingsworth. His son, Chris Killingsworth, is the drummer for Thrift Store Cowboys.
Okay.
When I threw you on the back of Skeeter's rig on the hottest summer on record?
Working on the back of Skeeter's rig is a memory I will take with me my whole life. Definitely.
It was so hot, they closed the airport.
We worked the three holes we punched on the... in the Lubbock International Airport, we're on the tarmac in August, and it was clocking in at about 115, under the baking sun on that tarmac.
I remember that summer.
We'd start the day with this plastic tub full of ice and sodas, and about 2 o'clock, the sodas would just start spontaneously exploding from the heat.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a big one. But yeah, lots of man, I remember that one day I was driving that 30-foot trailer back from a site to the shop, and that some piece of, like, concrete equipment or something popped off the back of it. Do you remember this, Mom? And landed right in the middle of 50th in Indiana.
Oh.
And I called you, and fortunately, I was trying to get the trailer off to drive back and pick it up, but I had made it back to the shop, and somebody had called the shop and let me know that was going on, and fortunately, you were able to head out there, and you picked it up and threw it in the back of the Oldsmobile, and came out.
That car, something, wasn't it? We called it the boom car.
This Oldsmobile, Matthew, it was a land yacht.
Oh, yeah.
It was like big, fluffy upholstery seats, like Barca loungers. There was a cigarette lighter in every door.
You got to smoke. Smoke them if you got them.
Cigarette lighter and ashtray. And long before it was a big thing, there were lights that you could turn on, like reading lights on an airplane over the back seats.
Man, I love those kind of cars.
It was wonderful. I really enjoyed driving that thing.
Yeah, it floated. It didn't drive, it floated.
It floated, yeah.
Well, we called it the boom car because I ended up driving it for like 15 years or so. And because, you know, then there's another downturn and you can't. And I can remember it was Bo Brown who told me one time when I pulled up on a job site, I had an image problem. So that was when I got a Honda Accord.
Well, another great car.
I think maybe Schaefer, that's when I gave it to you.
And that did nothing but boost my image.
Oh, dear.
I remember
you,
I could...
You mean your surfer persona?
I could drive with my left leg up on the dashboard in that car. I remember once Mom came out, somebody forgot something. So Mom came out in the driveway and she was reminded me of something or something. I was sitting there like that. And then Mom stopped. It was like, is that how you drive? I was like, no, of course not.
It could be a safety issue. You could get in just a minor fender bender and have a hammy problem after that, you know?
Yeah. No, fortunately, not, you know, didn't happen. And then the Accords came into our lives. Dickie was waxing nostalgic about the Honda Accords the other day.
Well, that's a great car.
Some of those, yeah.
Yeah.
We referred to as the magic Honda that went like 350,000 miles, and then we gave it to the guy who just come out of the cult.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
I don't know how long it lasted after that.
I am 100% certain that the magic Honda is still driving around somewhere.
One likes to think so, huh?
What was the...
Although, just clocked 258,000 on her Avalon, so...
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Gracie's still, yeah.
She's running. She's running for the record.
That is fantastic.
What was the year model on that Magic Honda? Do you know? Take a guess.
So let's think about that. Well, the old was a 1988. Oh, it was an 88.
It was an Oldsmobile 88.
I would guess 82 for that Oldsmobile.
Maybe 85. I don't know. I can't remember either, Schaefer. We got it after that Ford Escort station wagon died.
Yeah.
That's when we never do another Ford or Dodge.
And we bought it from Dr. Faggard.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know, Richard. I mean, Schaefer, I would say, I would guess our first Honda was probably maybe a 92 or a 95.
I was going to guess 92, yeah.
A 92, yeah. That's the right answer. You are correct. A 92 was a magic year for those on the
Accord. There was a blue one, a champagne one, a red one. There were three or four in our lives that got passed around. Even when I came back from New York, there was one sitting in Dick's driveway here in Austin that he wasn't using. And I got another, you know, came back.
I love that kind of family brand loyalty.
As in, you really don't have a choice. Here is a set of keys, and here are your wheels.
Right.
Man, and then there was the silver Toyota truck, but we have to dedicate a whole episode just to that truck.
Oh, I still wish I had her that one. That was fabulous. Yeah, it was a six-cylinder, four-wheel drive. Gosh, Ned, was that an 88 also?
That's a good guess. I couldn't really say.
Oh, man. It was back when they were still square, you know. You see a lot of them being towed to Guatemala.
Is that where they're headed?
I think so. Yeah. When you see, you know, three cars tied together headed south.
Yeah.
Wherever they need them.
That's right. Will run forever.
I don't know why I had the impression that you and Grant were both lecturers at Tech. I don't know. Well,
geologists, archaeologists, yeah. They both end in ology.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I always worked in industry.
Well, Mom, thank you so much for chatting with us.
This has been a lot of fun. I feel like David Letterman's mother.
What are we keeping you from this evening? You're trying to get off the phone. We hear that. That's fine. We're moving towards that. What are you doing over there in the Hub City?
Absolutely nothing. Just decompressing for post holiday. I got all of the lights and everything put away. It feels
Done.
I know. It's like, let the new year begin.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the holidays are going to kill me one of these days. Shiloh, why do you think that is? Like, when you have little kids, why do you think the holidays are so darn stressful?
I think part of it is expectations, but I don't know. I think part of it is everybody wants to see the small children. That's what I remember, is trying to get to see everybody, because everyone loves to see small children at Christmas. So when everybody's kind of spread out, you tend to do a lot of driving at Christmas time.
Yeah, we had a pretty good get together with Amy's family in Jackson, and her brother has a 9-year-old and 3-year-old twins.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Fun.
And that was fun. Yeah. And then my 10-year-old, like, palling around with his cousin, like, all the cousin action was just great. And then Amy's youngest brother has a new baby. He's just 6 months. And so that was a lot of fun. And
something to pass around.
Oh, and then we went to the country, to Louisville, Mississippi, to visit the country cousins. And they, cousin Aaron was down, they live in Maryland, but they have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And so they were all together, and they were like playing in the barn and playing in the hay and chasing the chickens. And that was pretty good. My son, his cousin Anna took him hunting, and he got a deer. He killed a little spike, harvested a little spike.
Wow.
Technically, like, they went out Sunday night and didn't see anything. And then Anna was like, well, I'll get up with him early. And she took him out. And sure enough, he got one. And he took a shot and missed. And then they waited. And about 20, 25 minutes later, some deer came back. And then he got right on the button. And anyway, I don't know. I'm not a hunter. I know a little bit about, like, the hunting part of it. But then once you kill the animal, you got to do all this other work.
Yeah, the field dressing is pretty
and
interesting.
And so Anna brought it back to their farm, and I paid real close attention, you know. And I was making the kids watch it, too. Of course, they were, like, engrossed. I've got this really great picture of all the kids standing around looking at the skinned deer. And
it's not... obviously some of it's a little gnarly, but that was the most interesting thing to me about the hunt was, you know, the anatomy.
Oh, I like the beer drinking.
That's good too.
No, I don't know. I say that because a lot of the only hunting I've done was with people from the beer distributor, and there was always beer involved. And
Mom, I just wanted to say real quick, you're talking about taking the lights down after Christmas, and that always makes me a little sad. And I think, it's you always
I'm with her. Like, it's like, whew.
Mom always did the most wonderful. She put together a great, great looking Christmas, a great smelling Christmas, a great, you know, everything about it was, I loved it. Even, you know, later when the kids left, she did the one thing where she had it was kind of a tumbleweed sort of.
Oh, yeah.
That she spray painted white and put white lights on. That was beautiful.
I like that.
So I always really enjoyed everything. Well, I really appreciate all that.
Oh, baby. It was such a pleasure. It is so much fun to have small children at Christmas, but it's also fun to just have grown-ups too. You know, it was fun with mother. I found out this time when you were just one-on-one with your 94-year-old mother, and then Kurt came in, you know, at the end of Christmas Day. They're kind of busy, you know, at Christmas time, but he got in probably about 11 o'clock Christmas Day night. But I found out that when I was born in 1954, I had not one, but two great, great grandmothers living.
Wow.
So the fact that your 94-year-old grandmother is still driving on Ocean Drive in Corpus apparently should not surprise us, Schaefer.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's a different kind of Christmas, but it was still, it's Christmas. It was still a lot of fun.
But you're glad it's over, right?
That's,
okay. Oh, sorry. Well, yeah, maybe
both,
maybe
both
that's
can't be true.
That's right. It's a tie. All good things must end. Well, and the other thing you can't get over is the fact it's 2025. It's like, doesn't it seem like it was just Y2O the other day, or is it just me?
Yeah, as of you know, these last few days, we're closer to 2050 than to 2000.
Whoa.
Of course, apparently, since we're all going to live to 150, keep it in perspective, huh?
That's okay. We'll just go to Mars.
There you go. Even better. That's what I did driving all the way to Corpus and back, was I listened to this new biography on Elon by the same guy that wrote that really great one on Steve Jobs. It was pretty fascinating.
Well, I hope they can get us up into the stars.
I do too. All right, guys. Well, this was a lot of fun. And yes, I certainly was not expecting this evening.
It was wonderful. And I tell you what, I don't hold it against you that I didn't have a gender reveal party.
Oh, I'm so glad. We won't be needing to pay the psychologist for that issue, huh?
No, there's plenty of others to deal with. I don't have to worry about that one.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm off scot-free by any means. No. All right, gentlemen. Well, Matthew, it was great.
Shryla, thank you for your time.
Back to
thank you so much.
Sure. Night, boys.
Take care, Mom. Love you.
Get back at you, kiddo.
Well, that's the most heartfelt episode we've ever had.
It's another very special episode. I did not plan for that at all. I wanted to do the gender reveal joke, and then I figured, let's see what happens.
Well, I mean, we just dropped an episode where we had a pretty serious long talk with your dad, and as we were talking to your mom at first, I was like, we've got to take this seriously, you know, like we have to give kind of equal time here.
I realized that afterwards.
But you got her talking about the toys, and then that guy they're talking about reminiscing about all kinds of things. And I think we learned a lot.
Definitely.
And
I don't think I even knew about the Jackson, Mississippi part of her life. That's kind of why I asked her. I was like, is there any other surprises about where you lived?
Interesting. She definitely had an interesting upbringing, and then what... like an idyllic, like, ninth grade in her sailboat.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that magical? Yeah.
That's insane.
Sailing across Corpus Christi Bay. That's a significant,
totally,
you know,
gels
trip.
Yeah, that's
so cool.
That's a little ways. You know, I spent, before the podcast, and, you know, I spent all this time setting up the robot.
And then
he never even made an appearance.
So the robot's back, though. I know we've missed, particularly everybody's, Alex Battles has been missing the robot.
Everybody's missed the robot.
It's fun. I had a few more things to talk about, but I think I've saved them until next time.
You know, I wanted to ask her some more serious questions about, like, how do you deal with depression at this time in your life when you are, you know, my aunt keeps telling me, oh, you're at this time in your life when it's just like, it's a lot with business and kids and this and that. And I just, I'll talk to her next time. About
maybe now that she's still comfortable, we can have a little heavier.
You think she's ever listened to the podcast?
She must have listened to an episode or two, but I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this way. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm just playing with my capo. It's kind of fun to
Okay.
put it on my fingers, and then they both
shaking a little bit. Look, you gotta move we got. I feel like there are some other things that we were that we need to just touch on
here.
For one thing, you texted me some stuff, and I'm gonna scroll up this text thread and remember some stuff that you sent to me.
I wanted to point out, you know, we have a big winter storm coming in next week.
Oh, right. So yes.
I had to go into what I refer to as my closets. Listeners, I live in what is effectively a large lunchbox. So when I say closets, I mean the empty space in between my sofa and my walls. And I got out. Mean,
that's not true. This place, there's a living room and a kitchen, and you have a bedroom back there.
It's super nice.
Yeah, it's not like all one room. Yeah.
It's a... And I got out my winter wardrobe.
Okay, and I'm going to describe it for you, the listener. It's a sweater.
A cable knit sweater.
It is just a sweater.
And my winter clothes.
That's essentially all you have for gear, right?
And that'll get me through it, yeah. We're going to be okay.
So, I do want to remind you of something that you sent me here, and hopefully not like the stuff that you put on the show sheet. You're going to remember why you put it on
it's
there.
It's pretty much 50-50 as to whether I'll remember.
Okay, well, here it is. I'm handing Schaefer my phone.
Oh!
An article that he sent to me a few weeks ago. We've been having... The holidays really stymied the podcast, and we really haven't had a chance to do this, obviously, no episodes being posted. But this just in, Schaefer.
This is just a really fascinating article in The Guardian. Unprecedented risk to life on Earth. Scientists call for halt in mirror life microbe research. Do you know what mirror life microbe research is,
Matthew? I do not, Schaefer. Please tell me.
It's so in the laboratory, they are constructing mirror images of molecules. So,
okay. Oh, that seems like playing with God.
Yeah. So you can actually
playing
God, a mirror microbe, which is, so that's actually a living thing, like a little, I don't know what you call it, a bacteria or something that's just basically the, all of it is the mirror image of what it is here. Like the molecules that make it up are just kind of reversed. I don't know. Everything about this just blows my mind.
Is this like is that mirrored image, is that in the multiverse or something? Or is it in our universe?
Many molecules for life can exist in two distinct forms, each the mirror image of each other. The DNA of all living organisms is made from right-handed nucleotides, while proteins, the building blocks of cells, are made from left-handed amino acids.
What?
Why nature works this way is unclear. Life could have been chosen as left-handed DNA and right-handed proteins instead. So scientists have been manufacturing functional mirror molecules to study them. And so why all of this? They could be turned into therapies for chronic and hard to treat diseases. Concerns. It doesn't say. Could cause lethal infections.
Oh. Oh dear.
The researchers doubt microbes could be safely contained or kept in check by natural competitors and predators. Existing antibiotics won't treat. So you know these things could cause infections that get out of control, and there's nothing in the natural world to fight them.
And then we just sort of assume that the scientists can come up with the antidote. Unleashed upon the world.
We hope so.
I mean, unleashed.
So funny thing is, you know, Ken Jennings and John Roderick, who do the Omnibus podcast, they always talk about the cataclysmic event that engenders their need to put all this stuff. That's the conceit of their podcast, is they're saving esoteric cultural knowledge, and to put in, and they're recording these, they're putting them in a time capsule for after the cataclysm that they fear.
Schaefer, should we do a time capsule?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is, you know, kind of, that's what this is. Although our cataclysmic event is just forgetting everything that's happened in our lives. and we'll have this to remember. So I took this article and I said, I texted Ken Jennings, or I emailed Ken Jennings, and I said, this really seems to me like it could be the cataclysm we fear, yeah, you know, that'll engender the event that you guys talk about in the omnibus. And Ken Jennings, you know, Jeopardy, greatest of all time.
Everybody knows who Ken Jennings is. And, you know, Ken Jennings is, you know.
I call him Ken Jen.
He's a little full of himself.
Oh, come on. All right. He's absolutely not.
All right.
He's super nice. Okay. And he emails back anytime you email him.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, I was wrong.
And so I said, you know, hey, this guy's, I'm worried this could be the cataclysm you fear. Ken wrote me back. He said, you know, a funny thing, I was just reading an old comic book for the Fantastic Four.
Oh.
And the evil genius in that comic book was doing this exact thing, creating mirror life. And he said something about, like, they harnessed the sun, or they blocked out the sun so that the sun couldn't provide the microbes the life they need to live. And that's how they say, so he said, don't worry, there's a plan in place to solve this problem, even if it does happen. It's going to be okay, Chief.
So was he saying that all we need is like a rock guy and a really stretchy guy and a couple of companions and we're going to be okay?
Yeah, everything will be fine.
Okay, well, good. I love it when Ken Jennings just lays those fears to rest. Should we lay this episode to rest?
It might be time to say goodnight to the ones we love.
Maybe I'm not ready yet. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe I'm not ready to say goodbye. No, I am. I'm kidding. Yeah, it was my idea, you know. I'm like, should we end this?
And we haven't done a poem.
But I do like it as a trope to whenever we have an episode, just to push it a little bit longer. Or like your mom was on the phone and she was trying to get off the phone. And so I kind of went to another topic, you know. You do it until like the publicist is like doing all the gesturing and you go, they gotta go.
Matthew, why don't you read this poem by George Trakey called Sleep? It's a short poem.
Oh, well, I like it. Okay. Then should I read it very slowly?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a poetry book called Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman?
A modern classic.
Is it? I just picked it up the other day and I'm trying to read some classics and I pick up this volume I've heard of before and it's very interesting, but it's poetry, you know, and it's pretty riveting.
Absolutely.
And he was ribald, right? And
could be quite.
It was full of wit. I've just read a few of the poems, but I was like, oh, this is fascinating.
Honestly, yeah. It also
has a chronology of his life in it, and that's pretty crazy too.
Most of what I read is the, you know, poems here and there that I read during my education. But I would say now, probably to be a 50-year-old man or woman in America, is probably that's the perfect time to be reading Leaves of Grass.
I
can imagine it speaking to you more than it necessarily might have when you were 20 years old. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And that makes me feel better about not having consumed all these classics that I feel like I should have. I've somehow gotten by in life seeming like pretty well read, and I haven't really read that many books.
Well, you know,
I want to read more. And so anyway,
listen, that was Matthew, the start of that. There's a lot of books out there. Nobody has read them all.
Okay. Okay. But maybe when I do get a little ways into it, we could have like a little, Walt Whitman episode.
Definitely. That would be awesome. Yeah. Pick out some of your favorites and let's do a Walt Whitman episode. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. So, who's this poet?
For the record, I have not read this. I found that it just looked like the right length. I know zero.
Oh, just the right length. Oh, okay. This is like the poetry of chance.
Yeah.
Okay. But do you know this poet?
I don't. No.
George Trakl. All I know about him is that he lived from 1887 to 1914. What is that? 27.
Yeah.
Just like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix. And yeah. Okay. Crazy. Well, let's see. George George with no E.
I hope there's no swears in this poem. I don't want to swear in my mom's episode.
Okay. We'll try not. All right. This poem is called Sleep. Damn you, dark poisons. White sleep. This highly peculiar garden of dusky trees filled with serpents, night moths, spiders, bats. Stranger, your lost shadow in the sunset, a dark corsair on the salt seas of affliction. White birds flap up against the seam of night over toppling cities of steel.
Well, it did have a square. It had the damn word.
Oh.
That was an extremely intense poem. I
thought you meant corsair.
I kind of like it as a bit of a counterbalance to our, you know, kind of happy little episode. It gives us a note of severity.
To me, this feels a little like a poem written for Mr. Show. Okay. I was like, it's like the sketch about the poem.
Yeah.
Sleep by George Strangle. I might become America's foremost expert on George Strangle.
Yeah, you may already be.
I may be. We need to put a a bookmark in this.
Thank you so much for that reading.
Thank you. You know, you have discouraged me from telling people that our podcast is about poetry.
I was thinking
that we start a spinoff podcast that's just about Walt Whitman. That way, when we tell people about it, they are riveted. they want to listen to it right away.
It's about Walt Whitman.
America's foremost Walt Whitman podcast. Okay. Finally, I laughed a little bit. I was struggling. Okay.
This has been so much fun, Matthew. Thank you for coming back.
I'm going to have to take your word for it, Chief.
Feels good.
Yes. Okay. Well, we love you. And the poorer the choices.
The sweeter the wine.
Hank's Saloon. Hank's Saloon. Even though soon it may go kaboom. We'll down one more round and croon one more tune for wonderful Hank's Saloon. Buy a beer, have no fear. There's a fine restroom in the rear. Can't write on the wall. There's no more room at wonderful Hank's Saloon. Hank's Saloon, Hank's Saloon. Even though soon it may go kaboom, we'll down one more round and croon one more tune. Let's retreat where good friends meet. Pull out a bar stool and take a seat. Order a whiskey and howl at the moon at wonderful Hank's Saloon. Wonderful Hank's Saloon. that wonderful Mississippi.